The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audioboo, and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Tonight's episode of the Shining Wizards Podcast is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, your one-stop shop for all your podcasting needs, including Neckbreaker, bringing you the latest in heavy metal and professional wrestling headlines. The Turnbuckle Throwbacks, taking you from the current to the way back with wrestling's past as well as its future. The Midnight Jewelry, bringing you back to the 80s and 90s with horror movies, pop culture, and of course, professional wrestling. Two and a Half Wrestlers, two guys that are in professional wrestling and one guy that used to be, bringing you the ins and outs of the professional wrestling independent scene. Apex Radio from Canada, bringing you the latest news and information on the professional wrestling scene from north of the border. Pro Wrestling 101 from 20-year veteran Justin Credible, bringing you information on how to make it in the world of professional wrestling. The Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular with the Wolfman Jack Foley, bringing you funk music and wrestling news. And of course, the Fallen Angel Triplets, Dante Kanzer and Krim Gideon, bringing you the latest on their travels around the independent wrestling scene. All this and more as part of the Shining Wizards Network, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, where, of course, it's entertainment here. Gentlemen, welcome to a very special live Monday night edition of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. For, of course, it's wrestling talk.
And talk about wrestling.
I am Tony.
I am Eddie.
And I am Kevin.
And on the phone with us tonight, we are joined by co-owner of Pro Wrestling Syndicate, Mr. Eric Pleska. What's going on, Eric?
What's going on, fellas? Thank you for sharing a Monday evening with me. Really appreciate it.
The pleasure's all ours, sir. The pleasure is all ours.
Yeah, it's not like there's anything to watch on television on Monday nights wrestling related, so we thought, let's just talk to Eric instead.
Yeah, fuck that noise.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Eric, we have a lot to talk about. I know you've been biting your tongue for the past couple of weeks or so, and it's understandable. It's understandable, but now that time has passed and a certain event is over, there's a lot of questions I have to ask you regarding this past event. If anyone doesn't know, we're referencing the memorial show for Scott Epstein, which was done out of the kindness of the hearts of Eric Pleska, Pat Buck, and the PWS crew. And when one thinks of a memorial show, you think of friends of the deceased joining in as a unit, without asking for any kind of extra favors or certain type of compensation, just doing it out of the kindness of their hearts in honor of the memory of a friend that passed. However, Eric, that doesn't seem like the way things went.
No, not at all. I mean, just to kind of backtrack a little bit and just to kind of give a little brief background here, just so everyone can kind of be on the same page. And I believe in storytelling from page number one, you know, not like a choose-your-own-adventure book of jumping around. But just like a little bit of a prequel. You know, Scott Epstein was a friend of mine. He was someone that, you know, I really only saw in person at wrestling events, but someone I would spend hours upon hours on the phone with constantly, okay, to the point it was ridiculous. I mean, I might as well have him on speed dial, you know?
Right.
Nicest guy, very kind man, sadly passed away at the end of December. He had just turned 64 years old. And when this happened, I had spoken to Pat, my, you know, co-owner, partner of Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and said, look, like, I'd really like to do something. You know, we have absolutely nothing going on in January. We have the ability to do, like, a cool event. Let's try to reimburse the family for the funeral costs. And my goal was to raise $5,000 for Scott Epstein's family. That was my goal. And Milt, I said, the plan was to do the event in January. And with the memorial event, the whole idea is to really take all the money coming in and donate. So that means that you have to really cut every cost possible, okay? And before we even put wrestlers on the table, we need a place to run this event. You know, PWS, we own a ring and guardrails and chairs and this and that, so we could finagle in a lot of different situations if we need to. I reached out to the Sportsplex in Metuchen, New Jersey, which is where the PWS school is located, and I spoke to the manager and said, look, here's my situation. Here's what I'd like to do. Can you do me a solid? Can you give me any date on the calendar for free? We won't violate any zoning issues. We're not selling tickets. Everything is cash donation at the door. Yeah, not a problem. Waited a week, waited 2 weeks, kept following up. The payoff is I got the date of April 13th to run in Metuchen, and they were giving me the venue for free. To put in perspective, I mean, I'll expose it because it's not really private knowledge. Anyone can call a venue and ask how much they charge. You know, on average, venues that PWS run at, are you're talking $2,500, just to give you an actual dollar amount, okay? So we kind of, you know, have some basis to go with. So that was why the event was on April 13th. Unfortunately, literally a week after the event was announced, and so it said, too, I was in contact with, Scott's wife, Ash. You know, she knew about the event, was all for it. I got her blessing on it before we even proceeded to do anything. Because, if this was a situation where the family was like, no, like, we have no interest, I certainly wouldn't have pushed it, you know?
Right.
So everything was done properly, respectfully, and, you know, really just, you know, out of kindness. Metuchen, as soon as the show was announced, oh, no, you guys can't do this. There's going to be a lot of people. This is going to be problems, blah, blah, blah. So then the event had to move, and then it was scrambling to find another location. And that led us to Avenel, New Jersey, which is where I was running my bombshell shows, which is the PWS female division, and Pat was running Fight Night, which is the students of the PWS wrestling school. Avenel cut me a deal. They were willing to take half off the rent. Now I'm paying a little bit out of pocket, not a big deal. And then Avenel, a couple weeks later, said, no, you can't do this event. The fire marshal in Avenel refuses to give Pro Wrestling Syndicate a fire permit. I asked why. Did we violate some kind of fire code? Are we doing something wrong? No, he just will not do it. You would have to, in the past, we'd have to pay the guy overtime to come in to issue a little permit, which is basically just padding the guy's pocket to some political nonsense that, you know, we're forced to deal with. And in this case, he just didn't even want to be bothered.
And wow.
That was that. So now here we are, literally this time, 2.5 weeks ago. No venue. What do we do? Well, PWS doesn't cancel. I mean, we were prepared to, you know, run in someone's backyard if we needed to.
Yeah.
And I started going back in time and reached out to the Garfield Boys and Girls Club, which is where PWS had run in 2007. And the reason we stopped running there wasn't because anything bad happened. It was because, well, the venue made more money hosting bingo events than they did pro wrestling. So bingo dominated Friday nights, all day Saturday, and Sunday. As it worked out, we were able to sneak in early on a Sunday before bingo. Now, originally, the event was a Sunday afternoon. You know, we figured Sunday afternoon, memorial event, a little classy, you know, not really competing with other events. That's not what we were trying to do. We weren't trying to outdraw people or do anything like that. It wasn't really a PWS event. It was about Scott Epstein. That's what it was about.
Right.
And that the original premise was 2 p.m. meet and greet, 3 o'clock bell time. Figure on average shows 2.5-3 hours, wrap up around maybe 5:45. That was the plan. Well, due to bingo, it was basically we can pay a large amount of money out of pocket to rent the Garfield building, or we don't have an indoor venue. And that's why, just to explain a little, that's why the event was pushed forward to an ungodly hour of 11 o'clock autograph signing and 12 noon bell time, which is unheard of.
That was rough.
So that's a little background of how we got to Garfield, New Jersey.
Okay.
And that makes the headaches sense. Involved along the way.
Ugh. And that's not even the worst of it.
No.
Not at all, because now you have to start dealing with the quote-unquote talent, the legends, the friends of Scott Epstein. And first of all, I just want to start off by saying, when you see or when you saw Scott Epstein at a show, 9 times out of 10, his sidekick, the guy that was always next to him, was the superstar Billy Graham. And surprising to me, superstar Billy Graham was not a part of this. And I just want to ask you, what was your interaction like with the superstar Billy Graham, and what is the reason given as to why he might not have been there?
Superstar Billy Graham was the very first person I had reached out to regarding the event other than Scott's wife. So Superstar was the first wrestler I had reached out to. Scott Epstein and Superstar go back decades, literally decades. I mean, put that in perspective. I mean, I know for me, I've had friends, I'm 33 years old. I've had friends since I was, you know, 5, 6 years old. And to me, that's a lifetime. Put in perspective, another 10 years, another 20 years on top of that. You know, yeah. To me, that's mind-blowing to have had such close personal friends for such a long time, really withstanding the test of time, especially in the world of wrestling. You know, people come and go, screw you over left and right. That's just the nature of the business, as they tell us. You know, and Superstar Graham, I'd reach out to you, and, let's be honest here. Let's bang a little. Let's shoot. I mean, how are your reading skills? Would you like to refer to a piece of printed material and do a little narrative for us? Because I have provided, because again, too, with these interviews, I don't like to be put like in a spotlight where, oh my God, like, is he really telling the truth? Is he making shit up? I don't know. So what I did was I actually screenshotted an email exchange with Superstar Billy Graham, which I forwarded to you. So if you wouldn't mind.
I have it. I'm looking right at it. This is real deal. This is from Superstar Billy Graham to Eric. And the first message I'm reading is, and this is quoted out of the superstar's mouth, "Honestly, you may want to consider to stop moving forward with this show. If you don't have top names, you will have an empty building. Plus, by, B-U-Y, the time your show is booked, for it will have been right at 4 months since the passing of Scott. Also, you have had WrestleMania over and done with. Money will be tight from fans, and they will most likely not want to part with any more money. I would give this matter some real examination before moving forward with your event, as the last thing you want is an empty building. I also believe Bruno will want a payday to come in, Johnny Valiant also, but no air and hotel, yes. With each passing day, the event becomes less and less important to the fans. Sadly, Billy Graham." So that's right out of his mouth. Right there is just, that's just a strange message.
Can I chime in on that for a second?
Yeah.
This is Kevin. A memorial show to me should have no timeliness. A memorial show is not about when it happened. It's about the meaning behind it. And I mean, I understand that he may have had maybe some sort of best interest in heart, wanting to earn the most money for the family, but the excuse is kind of, what he's saying is not adding up in my head, really, because 4 months, 1 month, a year, it shouldn't matter when the memorial show is. It's a memorial show. The purpose behind it is still there.
Yeah.
I agree.
100%.
Which is why I responded the way I did, which I believe you have my response to the legendary superstar Billy Graham there as well.
Oh, I do. Well, first, he also followed with, "You are obviously a good man with deep convictions about honoring Scott. I wish you all the best of luck with your shows. High regards, Billy." And then Eric.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And then Eric responds with all due respect, absolutely not. Scott was a friend. I committed in doing this. Basically, absolutely not, as in, I'm not going to pull this show. And nothing will defer me from proceeding with this event. PWS consistently draws over 1,000 fans per show. You were at 2 of them last year, so you saw firsthand. I do understand the logic of name power. However, if folks can't make it or don't want to be bothered or decide to hold out for absurd paydays, then that's on them. Rocky Johnson, Tony Atlas, and Ivan Koloff were the only ones of legend status to confirm. Show is 4 months out from Scott's passing for two reasons. And then we gave the reasons with the venue and the fee and everything like that. I don't see how WrestleMania is a factor in any of this, true statement, especially with Mania being on the opposite side of the country. But hey, maybe you're right and I'm wrong, and maybe the show won't be as successful as I'd like it to be, but I'm certainly going to try. We have a stage and a Tron, a feature, a tribute video for Scott for the February 22nd event, which was done, and that was a packed event. Regardless, I'm just trying to do a sincere good thing, as Scott was a pal. If people want to support it, great. If not, no worries. So that in turn addressed every single thing that Billy Graham had to say. Did he respond to this message at all?
His response back was actually what you had read previously. You know, you're a man of deep convictions. And here's my thing, okay, and not to nitpick or anything like that, but I'm a superstar, Billy. And whether I couldn't make the show or didn't want to make the show or whatever, you know, I mean, how hard is it to say, hey, look, you know, let me send you a couple, like, autographs or something in the mail. Maybe you can wrap them up and raise some money that way. Or, hey, you know what? You mentioned you have a video screen. Hey, you know what? Maybe I can, like, cut, like, a video. Like, would that be cool if, like, you could play, like, a video? I have a couple things I like to say about it. Even if I can't be there or don't want to be there, you know, hey, make, like, something. Put something on the table. And to me, the lack of effort on his part was just a little disheartening. I mean, in fairness, superstar Billy Graham owes me nothing. And in fairness, he doesn't owe anyone anything. To me, I just thought it was not really, not the way I would have done something if the situation was flipped.
Yeah.
And after superstar Billy Graham, the next guy I targeted was Ivan Putski, or Putski. I'm half Polish, so I guess I'm obligated to say
Putski.
Ivan Putski. He was from New Jersey and moved down to Texas. And part of what Scott and I would do at TWS shows always have autograph signs before. And one of my last business deals with Scott was, we were going to bring Ivan Putski to PWS for the February 22nd show. Scott spoke very highly of Ivan. It was like, I, you know, really would love to have him. I think he was great on autographs. Fans haven't seen him in a long time. He's a great friend, blah, blah. And I had booked Ivan Putski for February 22nd at PWS. And, you know, normally I don't like exposing paydays, but in this situation I will, because it's relevant to the story. Ivan Putski agreed to come in for $1,000 to sign autographs to PWS. And Scott and I were going to, you know, split that $1,000, split his airfare for Texas, split his hotel room. And, you know, whatever was made on autographs, Scott and I would split 50-50. And that was the last, one of the last conversations I had with Scott was finalizing that deal.
Right.
And, you know, after Scott passed, I had contacted Ivan and said, look, you know, unfortunate news, you know, Scott passed away. And, you know, we're actually doing a memorial event for him. So would it be okay with you if we kind of split your February 22nd booking to this April 13th memorial show? I'll still pay you the same amount of money we agreed upon. So do everything we agreed upon, just shifting the date, because I think it would be more powerful for you to be there for an event honoring Scott as opposed to, you know, being at an event with Mickey James and, you know, like a PWS show.
Right.
And he said, yeah, you can certainly do that, but I got to tell you something. You know, my last conversation with Scott Epstein was that I actually told you the wrong price. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, I think I told you $1,000. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. He's like, no, I actually need $2,500.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'm like, well, look, I'm not trying to lowball you, or I don't know what you discussed with Scott. I only know what you talked to me with firsthand, which was $1,000. And, you know, hey, this is a memorial show for Scott. Like, we're donating the money. Like, you know, it's basically me ponying up $1,000 and hoping to make it back on, you know, Ivan Putski gimmick. Whether I do or not, you know, who knows? You know, plus airfare and hotel on top of that. So really more like $1,500. And he held out for $25, putting much.
Wow.
And that just blew my mind, where I'm like, I mean, again, not knocking. I mean, Ivan Putski, Bootski has certainly done more in wrestling than I have. You know, has certainly achieved a lot, not knocking the gentleman, but I mean, I don't really see Ivan Putski around. I don't really see him getting booked for things. And, you know, for me, the fact that you're even being offered money to come in to an event to honor your friend that you've known for decades, and you're going to turn around and actually hold me up more than double what you had originally agreed upon payday-wise? That's crazy.
That's insanity. You know? That's crazy. I mean, like, this to me, it sounds like this is the shit that you have to go through when you, you know, book a normal show. You know, of course, sometimes talent is going to, you know, do weird things like that, hold you up or charge more. But the nature of this show, the nature of the show that you're holding and these wrestlers and legends pulling this nonsense on you is just, it boggles the mind.
But, you know what's so funny? Like, from a very logistic standpoint, what you just said is correct. However, to be honest, we rarely have people that do this on normal PWS shows. For the most part, the PWS shows, we usually deal with professional people that they agree to something and they stick to it, and it's rare. You know, like, we might have, you know, like, random nonsense here and there, but rare, really, really rare in the grand scheme of things. This was really just mind-blowing. And, you know, again, if the situation was flipped, I mean, I would have certainly said to me, the organizer of the event, like, hey, you know what? You agreed to split me at $1,000 for Scott Epstein, and, you know, you're doing this event for Scott. How about this? How about we split it with each other? And how about, you know, you book my plane ticket, maybe, you know, throw me $500, and we'll split everything down the middle. I'll be happy to pay. Something. You know, just something. No.
Yeah, at least some kind of compromise. And, you know, there's other people reaching out to you to be on the show, people that I think you've dealt with in the past. Another message I received from you was from Missy Hyatt, of all people. She said, and I quote, "If you are interested, I would love to work on the show for free in exchange for a plane ticket and hotel room." Now, this is someone we're talking about that has flyer miles, correct?
I would dare assume she does. I mean, I think of Missy Hyatt as someone that's been around a bit, not saying that in a dirty way. I don't know her like that. I've only met Missy Hyatt once, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. So continuing on, she's, you know, a longtime personal friend. She was in the wedding party when he married Ash in 2009. She still stays in touch with his son. Scott did a lot for her outside of wrestling. He even helped stage an intervention in 1999. That's fun. And he helped her get a teaching job when she lived in New York. Now, everything I've heard about Scott is he's the most stand-up guy. He's helped out so many people, and he was always there for everybody. You've dealt with Missy Hyatt in the past, and I know there's some stories that you are willing to tell, and I'd just like to hear a couple of them.
I dealt with Missy Hyatt once. Missy Hyatt, who at the time was living in New Jersey. It was 2009. We were doing a memorial show, the only other memorial show PWS has ever done, which was for a wrestler named Holy Normus, whose birthday actually is tomorrow. It could have been 39 tomorrow.
Wow. Yeah.
We did a memorial show for Paul, and because ironically, at the Garfield Boys and Girls Club, it was the last time I ever in that building prior to yesterday. And Missy Hyatt, along with Dawn Marie, former ECW WWE Ballet, came to me and said, "Hey, we'd love to come in and do some charity auctions to help you out with the event." I said, "Yeah, you know, that'd be really great. Any help you could get, you know, would really be fantastic." And they came in. They set up. They were raffling gift baskets. And when they were all said and done, they ran the raffle themselves. They announced the winners themselves, this, that, the other. And then they took the money. We did a cash donation in the ring, which I've never actually exposed the number, but might as well. It was $3,200 change. This is Hughes, Paul Norm's mother. Was pretending to turn the ring by Nate Stein. Video is actually on YouTube. Little Guido and a bunch of others at the ring, a bunch of folks. And I don't know where that money went for their charity auction. And I asked Missy Hyde what they plan on doing with it. And they explained to me that they were setting up a charity, which would become Wrestler's Rescue, which
oh God.
Some, uh, some legends that I've dealt with in the past have been nothing but kind. Folks like Kamala have gone on to expose being completely fraudulent. So where that money actually went, I have no idea. And from there, Betsy Hyatt got into a very heated argument with ECW Zombie, where she was yelling at him, F you, you know, I'm not a has-been, you're never was, and this, that, the other. And it was just ridiculous. It was in front of fans, and it was, more importantly, in front of the building manager that was basically like, yeah, no, like, you know, gotta go. And wow. Kind of like, for me, like, here's a person that my one experience with was in, you know, for a memorial show. I don't know if Misty Hyatt had any, you know, connection to Paulie Norman or not, but, you know, she basically put on, got into an argument, someone put on a huge scene and then pocketed charity. And now here's a person saying to me, well, yeah, if you fly me in, if you get me a hotel. Now, if you notice, she didn't say, hey, look, you know, if you get me a flight to the hotel, like, I'll do autographs or something, you can make the money back that way. No. She's saying, get me there, and I'll work the show. Now, what is she going to do on the show? She's going to, what, sit at a table and sell merchandise to try to make money for herself. That's what she would do. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Okay? She didn't suggest anything to the contrary. And as far as her gimmick money, well, again, it wasn't suggest, hey, I'll set up gimmicks and whatever I make, I'll donate. No. And to me, where is this money coming from? Where am I getting airfare and hotels? Where is this money coming from? Because now I'm negative money on a building, and we won't mention the I word, insurance, because that costs money too, you know. And I don't know. Like, I don't know where this invisible money is supposed to be plucked from. You know, maybe some of these veterans with all of their, experience, their decades of experience, could maybe wisen me, a youngling like myself, up to where I could go get free money. Because for me, the man in the question, you know, Mark suit is not showing up on my doorstep handing me money. So,
right.
So that was my experience there.
Yeah, and you just spoke of legends maybe smarting you up on how to get money. You dealt with a few legends on the show this past Sunday. Hall of Famer Rocky Johnson, Tony Atlas, Ivan Koloff. Nicole Bass was there in all her glory. What were your dealings like with the legends that did show up? Well, let's start with Rocky Johnson. What was that like?
Here was my thing. After trying with Superstar, after trying with Ivan Lutzky, after reaching out to Kevin Nash, who actually politely responded and told me he wasn't going to be available. Likewise, Diamond Dallas Page politely responded and said he was unavailable. And after reaching out to people that never got back to me, namely, you know, Scott Ball, Joel Waltman, and, you know, maybe they never got my message. Maybe, whatever. But I really, in order to do an event with Scott, I really needed some of his friends there. Otherwise, yeah. There's just some logic to that. So Rocky Johnson is someone who's actually appeared at PWS twice, once in 2007 and once in 2012. Of course, I call Rocky, I have no clue who I ever want to talk about. Really fun. And he's like, yeah, well, I looked at Scott, you know, this, that, the other. How much are you going to pay me? I said, well, look, what are you looking for? You know, it's a memorial show, this, that, the other. And he shot me a number that I kind of was shocked by. I talked him down a little bit, how to get nitty-gritty politicking with Rocky Johnson and Nicholas Diamond. And basically that turned into, to be honest with you, the unsung MVP of the Skeleton Memorial Show, and it might surprise people, it's really Jack Sabbath. To be completely honest with you. Because if it wasn't for Jack Sabbath, none of them guys would have been there. To be completely honest.
Wow.
Because in order to get Rocky Johnson, along with Tony Atlas and Ivan Koloff, who we'll get to momentarily, on board with doing this event, it wasn't worth their time to just come out to do one thing. Even though they were getting paid their full booking rate to appear at a memorial show for their quote-unquote friend that they would do anything for. still wasn't good enough because, well, you know, time is money. We have to travel, and that's on a Sunday. And, well, can we do something on Saturday and make money that way? And, I mean, Jack Sabbath and I, you know, he is a former promoter of Impact Championship Wrestling, which is came and went many times. Jack's kind of like that weird, I would say he's kind of like my Wayne from the Wonder Years, like the big brother I never wanted. That's kind of our relationship. You know, we goof a lot. We hate each other some days. We love each other the next. And whatever. And, you know, Jack was willing to help me out. And Jack agreed to book Rocky Johnson, Ivan Cola, Tony Atlas at their full prices to do an autograph signing at his store the night before in Queens to make it more worthwhile for these gentlemen to come in and get their full pay from Pro Wrestling Syndicate.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, you know, Jack has done many signings. Some are successful, some aren't. I wasn't there, but from the pictures I saw online and a few accounts I got, it really feels like they generate a crowd. So I really commend Jack because Jack has very easily said, no way in hell I'm doing this. Or, you know, threw them off pay or anything else. He didn't, you know, he paid them, and to be honest, you know, Jack had called me to check in with me that afternoon, and he's like, hey, I got Rocky Johnson here. I know what you told me to pay him. And Rocky's in the background. Yeah, you show him you figured it out.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, Rocky on the phone. I explained him. I was like, listen, I'm like, we're splitting your payday for the entire weekend in half and your airfare. So, you know, what Jack handed you, you know, you got to factor in air and hotel, you know, and he's not shorting you money. You're getting that money in cash for me tomorrow. Relax. I'll give it to you the second you walk in the door. And to be honest with you, you know, here comes Rocky Johnson looking, I mean, I'm not talking to him, but he looks like a homeless person. He's wearing a hat that I believe has a female body inspector on it. And, you know, came in, and first words out of his mouth, I said, hi, I'm Eric. He's like, oh, nice to meet you. I said, nice to meet you again. It's actually the third time we met. You know, just want to welcome you. You know, locker room's here. Your table's going to be here. This, that, the other. And he was like, cool, you got my money? Yep, here you go.
Wow.
Ready to go. He took his money, then he asked, we get free food here. Then he moved it on over to the tax man. You know?
So, oh, no.
Rocky Johnson. I mean, and to me, you know, here's the guy. I mean, you could look up on Orbit, you know, how much airfare from Fort Lauderdale, Florida to Newark, New Jersey is. Usually in the upper 400s, which is weird. Usually Florida, you think Tampa, you know, or Orlando, usually, you know, 250 kind of flight. Fort Lauderdale is a little expensive.
Yeah, a little bit there. So that's an interesting dealing right there. This is just blowing my mind. I'm almost speechless because it's just weird to think of people behaving this way. I want to save Tony Atlas for last.
Let me jump in with a question for Eric.
Okay.
Eric, where do you draw the line between talent being greedy, selfish, and actually, you know, doing like because they obviously they're agreeing to something, they should get paid. Where is the line that you draw between actually deserving what they ask for and just being greedy and selfish? What's the line?
With the PWS event, I think I don't want to say we have short fuses, but I think that we take a more educated kind of outlook on dealing with people, where if people are tackling with us or being problematic or people that we foresee as being issues, we cut it right there and don't deal with it. But as I said, I mean, luckily, anyone you see on a PWI show, for the most part, 95% of them have been fantastic. There's always going to be that selective few, but for the most part, we've been lucky. In this situation, it was really like me going to bat for Scott and trying to have Scott's friends be part of something where I wasn't really concerned about my wallet at that point. It became more of a, okay, I need this to happen, and whatever it takes to make this happen, it has to happen. I need these people here. I need Scott's friends present at this memorial event. And it was really grueling because the type of person I am normally would not tolerate that stuff. Especially from guys I worked with before, you know, I mean, whether they remember it or not, you know.
Right, right. So, moving on, we have Ivan Koloff, former world champion. What was dealing with him like? Was it similar to Rocky Johnson?
Actually, worse. Ivan Koloff is a miserable person. My mind was blown with Ivan Koloff. You know, I'd spoken to him on the phone once years ago about doing something. He came across as this like nice, shy, you know, little old man, you know, living in the Carolinas, you know, whatever. Was, you know, yes, sir, thank you, sir, this, that, the other. And, you know, for whatever reason at the time that we were negotiating, I remember what it was. Ivan Koloff doesn't fly. He'll only drive. He has something about flight. And for the show that we wanted him for, it was wintertime, and he didn't want to make the drive. So, you know, I was expecting the guy on the phone to have, you know, the same kind of nice, you know, jolly old man. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you know. I definitely, for me personally, actually get along better with, you know, the elderly guys. I feel they have a wealth of knowledge, you know. I definitely enjoy having conversations with those kind of guys.
Right.
Ivan held me up for a lot of money and required a deposit on top of that, which, I mean, I'll just put perspective. Great Buddha, Bret Hart, Insane Clown Posse, Jushin Liger, John Morrison, these all guys that work for PWF, they didn't require a deposit. And these are, you know, big deal kind of guys, you know?
Yeah, relevant.
I mean, I spoke with Booker T the other day and confirmed him for PWF on June 7th. He didn't ask for a deposit. He said, can't wait to be there. It's my pleasure. I'm hearing great things about your company. Can't wait to be part of it, you know?
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
So I think Olaf asking, I mean, dude, and we were talking actually more than what Rocky Johnson hit me up for, which I thought was obscene. Ivan Koloff was a very, very pricey individual. I sent him his deposit. He called me every day after that. Did you send my deposit yet? I checked at the post office. It hasn't come. Oh, well, maybe tomorrow. Hey, did you get a tracking number on that deposit? It was are you freaking kidding me right now? And this is when the show's like 4 months out. I mean, we're talking like 4 months out of a show, and you're asking for a deposit for a memorial show.
Yeah.
Like, relax, you know? Of course, when he finally got it, he didn't bother to tell me to stop calling. And then it was, he needed something else. He needed a second booking to make the drive worthwhile. Then it was, he was going to come up a day early, needed an extra hotel room. And Ivan, Friday night of the show, Ivan Koloff gets into town. It's late, like 2:30 in the morning, late Friday night, early Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And he calls me and he says, I'm at the hotel. They have no reservation for me. It's just bad business on your part. Like, are you screwing me? And I said, what are you talking about? Like, I gave you the itinerary. I gave you the hotel information. I gave you the confirmation number. And he's like, no, they're telling me up and down, like, they have no room for me. I was like, okay, like, let me call them. She said, okay. Called the hotel. Very nice people over there at the Holiday Inn in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. And the guy, you know, the kid at the front desk, he's like, listen, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I've been sitting here since 11 o'clock tonight. You know, there's been not one person in the lobby, never mind anyone trying to check in. I would certainly remember if someone tried to check in and said they had a reservation we didn't have before. Like, there's been no one here. And I'm, you know, back and forth to the hotel, transferred in the hotel, like, to other people, and nothing. Then I'm on the phone with Orbit, nothing. Try calling Ivan Koloff back and forth to the phone call. 9 a.m., I wake up to Ivan Koloff calling me back. Oh, yeah, I'm here at the Best Western in Rahway, New Jersey. I'm like, well, I don't know why, because that's not your hotel. Oh.
Oh, my God.
Well, I was like, do you have the sheet in front of you? Can we pull it up? And he's like, yep. Oh, well, would you look at this? Saddlebrook? Yeah, Saddlebrook. And I was like, do you remember we had this conversation on the phone? He's like, no. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, let me try to trigger your memory. You asked me the name of the company, and I said Pro Wrestling Syndicate. You asked me how to spell syndicate, and we sat on the phone for 10 minutes spelling the word syndicate. And then I said, saddle go up, like saddle, like a cowboy rides on a saddle. You kept saying fatal. Do you remember this at all? I'm like, oh, yeah, this sounds so familiar now. Yeah, I guess I wrote it down wrong. So are you going to reimburse me for the room I just had to get? So I'm like, let me get this straight. I booked you two nights in a hotel, which was $142 a night. You saddle for calling the nail with a AAA discount. You didn't even use the room. I can't get refunded on it because the time has passed and you already, you know, would have checked in and checked out. You just never showed up. So not refundable. That money is gone.
Yeah.
Now you're trying to get me to pay for your room at the Best Western? Like, what? No. Absolutely not. And that was when I started kind of losing my patience a little bit. So he said, okay, listen, like, no worries. I'm going to go over to the proper hotel right now and get checked in, and you know, then I'll head over to this autograph signing. All right? No problem.
Jeez.
Well, selfish me. I had to take a dump. I had to go number two, and I selfish me was in the restroom for about 15 minutes. Reading, I got a new catalog from the Dollar General, looking through that. Sitting there in the back, true story, is what I read the best. Or Oriental catalogs are phenomenal, just big fan. So I come out of the bathroom, and I legit had 6 missed phone calls from Ivan Koloff, a missed phone call from Tony Atlas, and a missed phone call from Jack Beck.
Oh, God.
I called Jack Beck first and said, you know, what's going on? He's like, I don't know what you have going on with these guys, but Ivan and Tony just called me from the hotel lobby in New Jersey and said they're not leaving the hotel until Ivan has a room. You apparently didn't book them a room, and he's not leaving. I'm like, all right, let me call these guys back. I call Ivan back, he doesn't answer. I call Tony, and he says, yeah, we're over here at the hotel, and you, listen, man, it's just bad business. You're supposed to go to Ivan's room, and last night he had to get his own room. You told him you got one, and I was like, and I cut him off. I said, Tony, stop talking to me like a moron, number one. He's like, what? What'd I do? I said, well, what he did is he decided to talk to me like I'm a moron. And I understand maybe you're used to dealing with morons, so I'm sorry, Mr. Atlas. He's like, no, I'm Tony. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, Tony. I'm not a moron, okay? Here's the deal. And I'm screenshotting him, like, through text, the confirmation numbers. And everything, like, you know, right from, you know, Orbitz and from HolidayInn.com and all, you know, showing him, you know, everything while I'm on the phone with him.
Yeah.
Say, look, I'm not lying to you. This guy went to the wrong hotel. I'm sorry that 2 WWE legends cannot figure out how to check into a hotel room. Like, what do you want from me? Okay, we'll get this all sorted. Definitely. And, you know, whatever, got on the phone with him. Ivan calls me back, and he says, yeah, the problem was I was trying to check in under Ivan Koloff. I said, does your driver's license say Ivan Koloff? He says, no, of course not. I'm like, can you refer to that screenshot I sent you before where it's actually your real name that's on the hotel reservation, the one that, you know, matches your driver's license?
He checked in as Ivan Koloff.
He tried to, and they looked at him like, we have nothing at the Salvador Holiday Inn under Ivan Polo. Because,
wow.
Yeah. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, it's at the point of just like, this can't be serious. Like, you guys have to be ribbing me. This has to be some elaborate joke that's going to pan out, or maybe Ashton Kutcher is going to come out and say, ha-ha, we got you. I mean, I don't know, but, like, crazy. Absolutely crazy. So then... My man Tony Atlas, my main man Tony. So Tony was booked. He held out for an astronomical payday and actually got a triple shot out of the weekend.
Really?
Yeah. Two bookings ain't good enough for Tony Atlas. He needs three. He needs to get paid for the Scott Entity Memorial Show. He needs to get paid to sign autographs at Jack Tapp's store. And then originally, a promotion called Superstars of Wrestling was going to do a show at the Avenel Knights of Columbus, excuse me, the Avenel Columbian Club. We can't hold them the Knights of Columbus because they don't actually pay their monthly dues, so they're not permitted to be called the Knights of Columbus. The Avenel Columbian Hall, and this gentleman was renting the PWS ring and everything, was going to do a show there the night before the Epstein Memorial event was to take place in Avenel. However, when Avenel, you know, wouldn't issue permits, that kind of led to Superstars Wrestling pulling out of doing their event, and that led to Tony Atlas freaking out with me. Well, brother, you got to get me another booking. I was going to do this other show, and I know I'm doing the signing, and I'm doing your show, but I got to do something else, you know, make it worth my time. I'm thinking to myself, like, you gotta be kidding me. You know? So somehow, some way, he linked up with Gino Caruso and got booked to do ECPW. Okay, cool. Gino wants to use them, whatever they're dealing with each other. That's fine. But I later found out that Gino paid Tony a hell of a lot less than I paid Tony, or Jack paid Tony, which in wrestling is called piggybacking, which to me is kind of unfair, because usually if a wrestler is doing a triple shot, usually the people involved with the booking will get together and be like, okay, look, I mean, let's just use round numbers here just for argument's sake. Like, if a wrestler normally gets paid, let's say, $1,000, okay, well, maybe they're doing two things back-to-back. Maybe they'll dip the price a little bit. Maybe they'll say, hey, you know what? I'm doing two things back-to-back, so instead of getting paid $2,000, I'll get paid $1,800. Okay, well, if I'm doing three things, maybe I'll sit down to, once I get paid $3,000, I'll do $2,500 for three things, or whatever. You know, everyone's different, whatever the case may be. That's usually how it goes. Okay, so basically, PWS paid full price to Tony Atlas, Jack paid full price to Tony Atlas, and ECPW paid less than full price to Tony Atlas. But hey, good for Gino, I mean, whatever, but to me, that's a bad thing. On top of that, Tony Atlas hits me up and says, hey, you gotta get for Gino and see about splitting my hotel room for Friday night. And I say, you're working for another company on Friday night. It has nothing to do with me. My event's on Sunday. Why would I be getting you a hotel room for Friday night? Like, help me understand the logic here. Well, then I get Gino Caruso on the phone, and I explain the situation. And at first, he hit me up to try to get me to pay for a hotel room, and I politely said, like, no way in hell is that happening. But the intention was there. The intention was that, apparently, again, there's this money tree in my backyard that I'm just going and just bushels and bushels of money. And all these little increments add up. You might pick a hotel, I'm like, what's that, $100? But yeah, $100 here, $100 there, this, that, the other. It adds up really, really quick. And again, premise of the show is where the money is donated.
Yeah, all this headache and all this aggravation for a charity event. The guy couldn't even look the other way and say, you know what, let me do you a favor.
One would think, oh, and here's the other fun thing. I mean, you think about Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson, you might think of, you know, their glory day of, you know, tag team champions in, you know, WWE. My original plan, I asked, like, would you guys, like, mind sharing a hotel room just so I can kind of cut costs? You know, they both said no.
Jesus.
I'm like, I'm not asking you to, like, get in bed and cuddle with each other. Like, I'll get, like, a double room. Like, no. Like, we need our own rooms, man. You know, that's how it is. I take any little thing just to kind of cut costs here. Refused. Just blatantly refused. I mean, to me, that's crazy.
You might have been able to make some money back if you offered a deal with him, have Nicole Bass stomp on his face with her feet. And speaking of which, how was your dealings with her for the weekend?
Okay. Scott had a friend named Evan Ginsberg, who, Evan Ginsberg was a name I'd always heard in wrestling. I've heard that name for years, but was never someone I'd ever spoken with or dealt with on any level. I knew that he existed and had a good reputation, but I never had dealt with him. And Evan was friends with Scott, and when he called Wendy the Spec, he'd reach out to me about being a guest on his radio show. I said, sure, you know, I would love to do it. You know, thank you for, you know, thinking of me, you know? And a couple days, maybe like a week and a half or so before the event, he had said to me, hey, how would you feel about having Nicole Bass at your show? I'd love to bring her in. Which is basically meaning whatever money there is, if there is any, is between him and her. And I'm blind to it. Whether he's paying her or not or whatever, it's not my business. He's saying, hey, I'm extending this to you, so I can bring her in. And I said, yeah, you know, she was friends with Scott, you know, whatever. I'd asked if she would do anything on the show. I was told no, but she would say a few words about Scott. Okay. You know, shows up, she set up shop, you know, selling autographs and photo ops and this, that, which were, I mean, not taking a shot here at all. I just, a personal feeling, I was surprised that what she was charging for items was almost double what other people in the room were charging, more than double what, you know, I've seen Tommy Dreamer charge, where I was just kind of surprised by that. But more surprised as we're live at the Garfield Boys and Girls Club to see hardcore pornography for sale on Nicole's ass table, where, I mean, for me, personally, if people are into hardcore pornography, that's cool, that's their thing. I certainly don't preach or anything like that, you know, to each their own. However, as we're at the Garfield Boys Girls Club, I just kind of wish that, you know, people might use a little common sense, because all it takes is one person from the Garfield Boys and Girls Club or a parent of young child to point it out and be like, you know, this is kind of inappropriate.
There's I know for a fact that
someone bought that too, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Kevin, what are you going to do with that tape?
Yeah, it was me. It was me. Naughty thing. Very, very naughty thing.
It was, they were actually, I saw them. They were like bondage. Very strange. And not just the content, but the show itself. You don't do that.
To me, I thought that was just kind of weird, kind of inappropriate. But, you know, again, if people want to do that, you know, at their own free time, that's fine. I mean, whatever. I mean, typically, you know, if you go to an autograph convention, you see, you know, like WWE divas that may have graced the cover of Playboy magazine. Usually they'll have the cover kind of covered up, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be like when they'll have a certain time frame that they'll be signing that kind of material, you know, for the 18 and up kind of crowd, which is, to me, age appropriate. You know, for me personally, you know, if I don't have children, but if I did, I certainly would want them, you know, browsing a wrestling table looking for action figures and they come across a hardcore bondage video. I mean, I think that's a little ridiculous, in my opinion. Especially, again, I can't emphasize enough, the Boys and Girls Club of Garfield, New Jersey. Like, I don't understand.
It doesn't make sense. It absolutely doesn't make sense. It's unbelievable. Yeah, so that's a lot of the crazy drama that went on. As far as the positives, I want to focus on some of the positives. Like you said, you had Tommy Dreamer there, Greek God Papadom were there, and they came on their own free will, and I don't believe they asked for paydays.
Yeah, Tommy Dreamer is cool, man. Any situation where I dealt with Tommy Dreamer, he's been pretty honest, pretty on point with me. And in this situation, yeah, he sacrificed his day, you know. And, I mean, just to put in perspective, I mean, in my opinion as a promoter, I think Tommy Dreamer is worth a lot more money than Ivan Koloff sitting at a table, Rocky Johnson being the female body inspector, or right. Tony Atlas reinventing, I don't even know where I was going with that, you know, the reincarnation of Black Superman in 2014. But that's just my opinion. And I think anyone that deals with any of these guys on a business level would attest that, you know, Tommy is worth a hell of a lot more pay than these guys are, which is not knocking those guys. I just feel that Tommy has strong value to him. And, Tommy came in. You know, didn't ask it hooked up with an autograph signing at a store or, you know, double shot bookings or anything. Just happy to see them. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he has good character, absolutely. And Greek God Papadon too, it was cool seeing him there. And, you know, from my perspective, it was nice for Kevin and I to actually enjoy a PWS show for once. A lot of the time we're hidden behind a screen. We can't see anything. So it was
absolutely
nice to actually see these guys go out there. And they all, you know, worked their asses off. Devin Moore coming off of a brutal night wrestling for you guys early in the morning. A lot of these guys, you know, really put forth a great effort. So from your opinion, how do you feel the show went itself, not talking about the legends, but talking about the core PWS roster?
My biggest stress factor walking in that morning
was knowing that we can get into the building at 10 a.m. and we have to somehow set up chairs and ring tables and guardrails before 11 open doors. And, you know, the S-Group up there has got that done. I mean, yeah. That was pulled up. I mean, normally PWS shows, like, we have the, you know, a stage trot and all. We didn't bring that just because it does take up a lot of space. But, I mean, everyone really worked together and got that done, which I was very happy with. The PWS guys, I mean, they're reliable. A lot of times they ask, like, what I thought of their matches or critiques. I don't need to look at your match. You know, Kyle Reynolds. As Kyle Reynolds really wanted to get more, I know they're going to have a good match. I don't need to see it to know it's going to be good. You know? I have no faith in those guys, really don't. So on that level, that was good. To me, it was nice to finally meet Scott's wife, as well as his ex-wife and his children. They were all very nice. They were very well spoken. And it's kind of like meeting his kids. It was kind of like, you know, I wish I got to know these guys like years ago. You know, like these are people like I would be friends with, you know.
They seem very nice.
And gracious. And to me, that was awesome. The crowd draw, I was embarrassed by. It was not a lot of people at all. That stunk. I didn't know how to gauge, you know, this show. There were no advanced tickets. So, I mean, usually we could say, okay, our pre-sale is this number, and we can have some idea of what we'll end up with. And went into it really blind, and I was unpleasantly surprised by it.
I was a little surprised by that, too, especially considering the nature of the show and everything like that. I just want to rewind real quick. There was a moment when Tony Atlas gets up, grabs the microphone, and just basically breaks down in tears. After hearing everything that went on with Tony and these guys, how did you receive that when you were there live watching? Were you like, okay, maybe this guy legitimately does care? Or were you thinking, okay, crocodile tears? I mean, what's going on through your head at this moment when he's basically breaking down?
Exactly what I did was I shot Bill after the dirtiest look imaginable and walked outside and smoked a cigarette. That's what I did. And I was sitting outside with Dreamer, Rob Feinstein, Brett Lauderdale, and a vendor named Timmy. We were standing outside in the conversation. I could see it. And the reason I shot Bill After a look was because Bill After was a good friend of Scott for decades. And, you know, you hear the name Bill After and almost kind of looks like a weird like stamp of approval on things. Like this is authentic. It's like Bill After approved. You know, like an authority almost like a Yoda, so to speak. And Bill and I have always kind of long known each other a long time. And Bill, I'd reach out to about hosting the event because I figured, you know, who better than one of Scott's longtime friends to kind of be the face of the event that I was a host? And, I mean, to break kayfabe, because why not? The original booking plan was the match before the main was a squash. And the heels follow, which was supposed to continue to beat down. And at that point, the legends would pour out of the locker room, follow would powder to the back. And at that point, Bill After would get in the ring with these guys, and they would kind of go around and say a few words about Scott, and then that would kind of lead into his family coming in the ring and saying some things, and the donation being made. That was the plan, and then the main event, and that would wrap up the event. And the reason I decided to do it this way, my booking, was so the event wouldn't have this sad overtone while the event's going on. That would kind of be the moment right before the end where it all kind of comes together.
Yeah.
That was my idea. Maybe it was stupid, I don't know, but to me it made sense. Okay. What Bill After decided to do was walk around and start asking people questions about Scott. I basically said, hey, look, Bill After said he wanted to sing a song. I said, hey, look, cool, sing your song, 5 minutes, I'm going to get everyone ready in the back, cue David Adams, start ringing out until we'll be ready to roll in 5. Take away Bill After. 30 minutes later, he's walking around to people. Now, to me personally, I hate on-the-spot things. I hate when people just stick a microphone in people's face. I hate I'm not a fan of, required audience participation. I don't like that. Some people like to speak, some people don't. And I don't believe in making people that don't want to do something do something. Likewise, there are people at the event, that really, I was cringing when the microphone's off. Example, Bill Irwin, whom Bill Apter referred to as Scott Irwin, who, by the way, Scott was Bill's brother that passed away in 1985 in a car accident. But anyway, Bill Irwin, just to address him, I like Bill Irwin. Bill Irwin has worked for me before. He's very soft-spoken, very kind. I had a vendor reach out to me and had asked about bringing Bill Irwin into the show. I said, hey, you know what, that could be like a fun opponent for Tony Atlas. I like doing these like weird, wacky legend versus legend kind of matches. That's kind of like a weird thing I have that fun entertaining. This guy, his name is Eric Blay. He paid whatever, Bill Irwin, airfare, hotel, whatever. That was all on him. So I commend Mr. Blay for doing that. Bill Irwin never met Scott. Bill Irwin was there as a wrestler that was supporting what we were doing. And the people after stick a microphone in Bill Irwin's face and say, so what are your fondest memories of that? It's like, Jesus, so it's things like that where I don't like when people kind of go off key like that. To me, that's a profession. And right. It's mind-boggling to me to use the word Bill after the word unprofessional in the same breath, but to me that was ridiculous. And in case you're wondering, that's why we didn't have intermission on the show, which was originally planned, because we had to go through the show to be out of there at a certain time to make way for Garfield Boys and Girls Club Bingo Night.
My God. Yeah, that's a shame that that had to happen that way, because what you said you originally had booked actually sounded like it would have been pretty cool. So that kind of sucks.
Yep.
Wow, what a stressful mess.
I'm just the booker of the event. No one put a microphone in my face or even asked if I wanted to say anything, but that's all right. And likewise, for me, it's like, if things are booked for a certain reason, booking conversation out of Pat and Kevin, I'll be very honest, a lot of times I have very stupid ideas, and nothing to do like that. Fucking suck. Are you drunk right now? I don't know what you're talking about. sometimes I have decent ideas, and sometimes I have fucking straight up stupid ideas. there's one stupid idea that I had when Dusty Rhodes was going to be our commissioner, and we were going to do a Dusty. I said, why don't we do a Dusty finish on the match? And then the commissioner, I'd be like, hey, that looks familiar. And Ken looked at me like he wanted to punch me in the face. Like, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. He still makes fun of me to this day. I'm like, yeah, you're right, though. these are the conversations we have. You're like, some days we'll have good ideas, some days we'll have bad ideas. That's part of the fun of booking. You get to bounce ideas and kind of weed out the bad. With this, we're just like, a simple thing. I don't care how 5 minutes turns into 45. That's a little crazy. Then the thing came into play, too, about the, we had the legendary Davey O'Hannon was there. I don't know if you saw the red carpet out. Davey O'Hannon was in the house. You might be saying, who the hell is that? I was reached out by Bill Apter to say Scott's good son, Davey O'Hannon, legend. He was a jobber. I'm not knocking. I'm not a pro wrestler. I'm not knocking. But he was a job in the 70s and early 80s. I don't want to think Davey too. So is that right? Anyway, he came in. He was going to be like a guest timekeeper. He said his name. He didn't react. He didn't get up. And then it's like, hold on, let's go get him real quick. And then the last thing I'm doing is like, you didn't tell him what you were supposed to do. I go over things very meticulous. Pretty straightforward. Just time you say you have it. Just say you get up and watch the time. And apparently that was just so hard that Nicole Babb had stuff doing it. I had a whole lot of stuff doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. But another thing, too, again, about booking, there's a certain logic to booking order. Kind of like if you watch like a WWE pay-per-view, you notice that, the Divas match is usually right before the main event. And it's usually done like that, kind of seems to kind of add a little bit, and the main event will have to be better. That's kind of like the thought process side. There is like a weird thought process that goes into putting match orders. And honestly, Pat's excellent. Signing things in match order, that's like his fucking brilliant. With this, I wanted Atlas and Zuma to be match number two. And the reason is because there are multiple form formats, and I want to break them. Well, match number two is ready to go on. Zoom, suit it up. He's got a talk. Mickey, ready. Music's about to hit. And then I hear Ref Lauderdale comes up to me, Ref the Patch, and says, Rocky Johnson wanted me to move the match order. He's not done yet.
There's a set order. I mean, you do things the way you have so it flows. And when people interrupt and go off the cuff, it definitely puts a roadblock in what you're trying to achieve. So I could see that as being extremely stressful too. And the funny thing is, like you said earlier, you usually deal with people that are professional and easy to deal with, and usually the shows go on without a hitch. But it's as soon as you kind of start going outside the box a little bit and deal with people that you don't normally deal with and include in shows, it seems like things kind of take a turn for the worse.
Yeah, I agree with that. My thing too is, look, hey, you know what? If Rocky Johnson flew himself in, I mean, his son only has, what, $70 million? If Rocky Johnson somehow used to fly Miles Johnson up there, or, you know, sacrifice his pay or anything, and he was like, hey, you know what? Well, I grabbed a slice of pizza real quick. I didn't get champagne today. Cool, man. Go from. Stuff like that I'd be very relaxed about. It's like, hey, you know what? You're showing respect to what we're doing by being part of it on your own volition. And that handout. But the second that you're being paid money and being catered to, you're an employee for a syndicate today. And like, please, personally, if I went to a shoot 9-to-5 job, and I know my lunch break's at 12 o'clock, and 10:30 a.m. Hey, you know what? I'm still about to get a hot dog. See ya. I think that's also to the thing about that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I just wanted to touch on something else also. Unfortunately, I was supposed to be a vendor on the show with Black Machismo, Jay Lethal, but, you know, it gets a little shady, I guess, sometimes when you're working with companies like Ring of Honor. I mean, it becomes like these guys kind of ghost on you a little bit. Well, what exactly went down with Jay Lethal?
First of all, the relationship with PWF and Ring of Honor is kind of strange. I don't like, have issues with them, per se. I mean, anytime I talk to Kerry Sulkin, we speak to each other as gentlemen, we get along. When PWF changed venues for the third time, I had reached out to everyone and said, hey, look, just reaching out, change the venue, change the time, you know, want to make sure everyone's still good. And I never heard back from Jay, which is weird. And I found out later that Jay was over in Europe for a while. I guess he didn't have phone reception.
And, oh, wow.
Finally, a couple of days before the show, I got hold of him. He was like, nah, he's like, I can't do it. Ring of Honor, Sinclair, who owns Ring of Honor, Sinclair has been doing a commercial. And he's like, don't worry. He's like, Scott was a good friend. My dad's been coming out of the donation. I'm kind of like, that's perfect. I didn't think that. I don't know. I mean, Jay, I'll say this, man. He's worked at PWF, so he's put in 110%. Jay is a hell of a wrestler, hell of a performer. I remember the one show where Psycho Sid was booked to wrestle Matt Hardy, and Sid made up a story that he got mugged at a deli in Memphis.
Yes.
And I actually looked up every deli in Memphis, Tennessee, and there's not one deli in Memphis that's open this morning, but neither here nor there. Jay Lethal went out as, we called him, like, Psycho Lethal or whatever the hell it was. Like, went out to his music, mimicking Sid. It was
phenomenal. And you got a better match out of him anyway, so it was
for the best. And Lethal goes back to me to when PWF started. I mean, 2007, Lethal was wrestling Lanny Poffo, in the Garfield Boys and Gold Coast. Jay's always been very cool, very good performer. So I don't know what happened there. It was Ring of Honor giving him stuff, because I personally do not believe that Jay would flake out on something like that, unless there was a damn good reason or some employee strength behind it. That's not like him. So I was kind of surprised that happened.
Right, right. I was leaning more towards thinking that, you know, Ring of Honor was probably giving him some shit and that had a lot to do with it. Donations for Scott Epstein. You can still make donations. I know his son is helping run a foundation, the Macho Foundation.
Yeah. Children Put Together is actually a really well-done website, linked directly on ProWrestlingSyndicate.com, where they explain the entire charity, what it's all about, where the money goes, and very well done. I was actually very impressed by it. And yeah, you can go on there and make a donation to help out the cause.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Eric, man, wow, this has been enlightening. It's just it's kind of a scary look into the dark side of professional wrestling, so to speak. The whole behind the scenes that people don't get to see, and it's a little disheartening to me as a fan of wrestling, knowing that what you guys were doing was for a good cause out of the kindness of your heart, and these so-called legends and professionals just gave you so much shit for it, especially when it's, you know, designed to honor the memory of a friend. So to hear, you know, your stories about this, it's enlightening. It opens my eyes, and you just never know what to expect in the professional wrestling business.
That's true. I mean, look, I mean, my thing, I knew I was going to deal with Eddie. For me, all in all, I can't thank people that showed up enough and the TWS crew for really bumping it. But it makes me sad that there wasn't something better to honor someone that was so great, you know, and I think that's what I really take away from it all. You know, and to me, that's a tough pill to swallow. And for me, the type of person I am, I'll be the person that will probably attempt to do this again and try to do it in a better fashion. I don't accept defeat well. I'm not that person. And, you know, like I said, my goal was to raise about $5,000, and surely fell short of that. Yeah, I like challenges. I like uphill battles. You know, they're good. It's my cap muscles, you know? So, I have a hard time walking away from the situation, as I've said. I'm not really accepting that. You know, I mean, look, a bunch of old school guys felt like being douchebags. That's the reality. And, hey, you know what? I can't really fall back from fans, too. I mean, look, Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, Northern Jersey, that's rough. That's rough.
Yeah.
You know, it's rough on me. I mean, I'm not a morning person. I was outside, at quarter to ten. I was, half awake. You know, it's not easy. But I don't fault people if they couldn't make. Also, too, Tom Sunday, people have things going on. I totally get that. But, I don't know. To me, I think this is just the end of chapter one of this. I don't think it's the end of the story. You know, like I said when we started, I like telling stories at the beginning. I think this will close the end of chapter one, and I think chapter two will pick up on a brand new page, and hopefully have a better happy time.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming from the Shining Wizards and all the fans, you guys from the outside looking in, it was a fun show. All the wrestlers worked their asses off. David Adams running back and forth doing ring introductions and running back and doing commentary and handing off microphones. I mean, he works really hard. You can tell that you guys are all in tune and sync. And the guys like Papa Don and Tommy Dreamer that came out of there, out of the kindness of their own hearts to participate. Like, those are the guys that you have respect for. And those are the guys that appreciate the fans. It's just a damn shame that the shit that you had to go through, man.
Never a dull moment. Certainly never
That's
a dull
sure.
moment.
That's and, for sure.
It keeps it interesting. You know, I mean, all I can say is, a wrestling event is really about telling a story, and I feel that if people don't get a memory or something away from an event, then you do a good job telling the story. And for one way or another, I think that there were some stories told with this event, both good and bad.
Oh, yeah, there are absolutely stories told. I mean, Nicole Bass just being there was a story in itself.
Yeah.
Oh, look, she just gave birth.
Well, oh, God.
Eddie, Eric, I don't know if you saw my Facebook, but
Nicole Bass at some point during the show was holding a baby.
What?
Like a baby that could have been more than like, I'll say like 6 months old. And like, was like manhandling it. And then all of a sudden, like, Eddie goes, oh, look, Nicole Bass just gave birth.
Oh, Lord.
And then
I don't know Nicole. I can't really dog her. I don't know her. You know, my one conversation with her, she was very pleasant, and she's like, "Hey, look, I'm sorry I'm late. You know, got stuck in traffic." No, no worries. Because to me, hey, you know what? You're here. You're not costing the show money. So I definitely am going to take a more relaxed approach. To me, hardcore pornography at a boys and girls club, not really appropriate. Maybe I'm being too judgmental. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I'm too conservative. I don't know. But to me, that's a little out there. But, hey, you know.
I will say this, though. She did seem to be the most genuinely happy to be there.
She did. She definitely did. And, I mean, I was appreciative that, you know, she had some good stuff to say about Scott. That was definitely cool. You know, but for me, yeah, it's one thing to hear someone like go after speak about Scott, know that he's being sincere, and then watch somebody else go into this whole like waterworks, tearing, did that thing, and there's nothing I wouldn't do for this man. And well, why are you here, like, charging money?
Right.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, if the ghost of Bruiser Brody isn't haunting this guy, I mean, fuck, man. Maybe Tony Atlas will outlive me, and maybe someone will play a rib on me and book Tony at my memorial show, you know? And maybe my hot comeback, you know, Jacob Marley routine on him. I don't know. But
that's phenomenal. Before we let you go, I was just pointed out two things by a couple of people. Missy Sampson just told me that Jay Lethal's dad actually went to the show and made a donation. So I thought
that's very nice. Okay, I apologize. I was running around. So Jay Lethal's dad, I would have liked to actually say hello to him. So guess I missed him.
Yeah, so I thought
that was Jay Lethal's dad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We thought we recognized him. It was him. And JP, John, he also wrote that the day before the show, Jay Lethal posted an Instagram video hyping the memorial show. So, you know, Jay Lethal's heart was in the right place. And obviously, yeah, I believe it was Ring of Honor that just kept him from showing.
I off the record, unofficially, without PWS Ring of Honor drama coming in. But, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. Like I said, man, Jay's always been cool as hell. I have nothing bad to say about Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal's a great performer. It's weird saying this about a veteran, but he has a bright future. I mean, I think people forget how young he is sometimes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing it a while, and he's still, like, he started very young. I think he was 16, 17 years old when he started training at Jersey All-Pro, so he's been doing that a long time.
Sure, yeah, man. You know what? I mean, honestly, if there is going to be a, you know, Epstein Mania 2, is certainly someone I'd love to have on board, and hopefully it'll not conflict with Ring of Honor commercial schedules. You know, I mean, maybe we could have Jay Salva from the green screen, and we could, you know, help us clear film the commercial. You know, maybe make nice and nice that way.
Oh my God, Eric! Before we let you go, man, we got some awesome. Well, you have some awesome shows coming up. One in 2 weeks, and then a huge May show, and then again in June. If you'd like to just give us some plugs. June is like the WrestleMania of PWS.
Absolutely.
So, you know, give us some plugs on what's coming up.
All right. Well, coming up in less than 2 weeks, April 26th, PWS is back in Rahway, New Jersey. And Kevin Matthews against Bonesaw, heated rivalry going on there, PWS title on the line. Bonesaw still undefeated. Kevin Matthews, three-time PWS champion. Something's got to give there, so I'm actually really looking forward to seeing that. The big story, though, going in, too, we have the return to the ring of the Godfather. I mean, the Godfather was rumored to come out of retirement at last year's Royal Rumble, which just didn't happen, and the Godfather returning to the ring, that's going to be cool, you know, and he's going to be involved in 4-on-4 action, teamed up with the big deal Craig Steele, amongst others, which that should be a juicy tandem right there.
I'm gonna say, are we gonna get some hoes for that match or what?
I think you have to be there live to find out, but I don't think PWS ever disappoints, especially, I mean, between the Godfather and the big deal Craig Steele now. I mean, Lord only knows what's gonna go on. And a lot of focus is really just like hard hitting wrestling. I mean, you have
Eddie Kingston against Devin Moore. You have Lance Hoyt coming to PWS against Dan Moff. You know, it's a lot of cool stuff going on. I have Homicide coming back. It's going to be a fun show. I'm definitely looking forward to it. You know, it's a lot of focus on the stars of PWS, which I think is cool. And May 17th, Jeff Jarrett's coming to PWS. And we're doing a seminar in talent evaluation with Jeff Jarrett. Jeff, of course, starting up his brand-new promotion, is out publicly, you know, scouting talent. So, you know, any independent wrestler looking to kind of get notice from, you know, both from PWS and from Jeff Jarrett, it's kind of your opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, sign up at ProWrestlingSyndicate.com and take advantage of that. I mean, you never know. I mean, honestly, you know, wrestling's a lot about networking. You know, you make the right impression on the right person, and you really never know what's going to happen. You know, it's kind of the limit sometimes. And Jeff Jarrett's definitely, you know, the kind of person guys could, you know, I think really benefit not only learning from, but, you know, I don't know, getting critiques, getting an evaluation, seeing what he has to say. And, hey, you never know. Maybe Jeff Jarrett will take a liking to something that you're doing, and maybe that will open up a door that, you know, wasn't there before for you. So,
yeah,
that's pretty
awesome.
Cool. Definitely looking forward to that. And June 7th, PWS Supercard.
Yeah.
Book the Jewosaurus. Book the Jewosaurus. Book the Jewosaurus.
It's going to be a cool show. I mean, the one match we announced already is Low-Key coming out of retirement from back to PWS. Low-Key battles Rhino. We got Bret Hart's coming back, Booker T, Blue World Order, Hurricane Helms, Buff Bagwell, Lance Boyd, David Ford Smith Jr., Bonesaw, Mario Bokura, Dan Moff, Starman, Reality Check, The Drunk Swashbuckler, Matt McIntosh, Alex Snow, Cole Cabana, Baron Von Ramsey. You know, like, it's going to be a cool show. It's a lot of legends, it's a lot of, you know, the guys that are, you know, on PWS here and there, like the Cabanas and Shane Hell, the guys that really are awesome and really happy to have them as part of what we're doing before PWS. Yeah, like, and honestly, we're not announcing stuff yet for that show. Even though there's a poster circulating on Facebook, we're still not done, you know, so stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of cool things coming. Eric, I'm so glad that you didn't have to bite your tongue any longer and you were able to vent, get this all off your chest, and share these wonderful stories. It's been a pleasure listening to you open up to us about the inner workings of what goes on behind the scenes in booking a show, especially a show in the nature of the Memorial Show that you just did. Once again, thanks so much for joining us. Stay tuned for PWS. A lot of great shows coming up. And we will be back tomorrow night with another show.
If I can cut you off to say one thing in closing.
Yes, wait, sir.
Okay. Thank you. The one thing I will say is that Scott's children came to me after the event and said, listen, we really appreciate what you did here. If you lost any money on this show, as the first act of kindness of the Macho Foundation, we actually like to reimburse for a certificate, which I certainly, of course, do not, you know, take their money, but just to really show what kind of people these kids are is really what it's all about. And to me, that's a direct reflection of Father Scott, who was the kindest of kind. You know, so just wanted people to know that.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really cool. Yeah. That is really cool. Unbelievable. Yeah, they were very appreciative. You can tell.
Wow.
They were extremely appreciative, and you guys did a great thing, despite the hurdles. You guys did a wonderful thing. Once again, Eric, thank you so much for joining us tonight, man.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate the time.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Let's get a beer.
You guys still here?
We are here, and wow, unreal, man. Unreal.
Yeah, and if you guys are looking, if you're interested, like he said, the foundation, you can reach that on the Pro Wrestling Syndicate website, prowrestlingsyndicate.com. It's for a good cause. It's for Scott's family. It's in his honor. If you feel like making a donation, head on over there. You know, the link is there for the foundation. And what is the Macho Foundation? All the information is on prowrestlingsyndicate.com. Yeah, very interesting stuff, man. A lot of good stuff from Eric. He never disappoints when he talks to us.
No, he didn't hold back at all. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. It's just disappointing as a fan to hear, you know, the nature of the show and how things went down. It's just, I'm dumbstruck. I'm confused. I don't understand what goes through their minds.
And you know what? It's through all the hurdles that you said, Eddie, there were bright spots to the whole show. Tommy Dreamer should be commended, should be just like put on a different level now. And that's the kind of guy that from the brief experience that I've had with Tommy Dreamer, that's the kind of guy he is. When we were at WrestleCon 2 years ago, when I went up to him and asked for an interview, he said, "I don't do podcasts, but you know, let's go." And I felt bad, asked him a couple questions, asked for a picture, I'll pay for it. Took a picture with me. I offered the money. He said no. And It's the pattern of good people. Good people have patterns. And then to hear what Eric just left us with about Epstein's family blew my mind.
Unbelievable. Unreal. It really is. I mean, like, there's like two sides to the business. There's like a really bright side with some great people. And there's that dark kind of carny side that just, you know, it's just like there's a line between them. There's really no shade of gray. It's either you deal with really great people or you deal with like shiesty business type people. And it's just weird.
And the one thing that confuses me about this, would you charge, as like if I'm a friend of somebody, would you charge me to attend this person's wake? Would you charge me to attend this person's funeral to make it worth my time?
This is
like that. It's like if you're my friend, show up and be there for me. Be there for my family.
Exactly.
And I understand as a performer myself, I get it. We all want to make money. We all have to make money. But there are certain things that certain boundaries you don't cross, certain lines you don't cross. And to me, it was a shame to hear this about certain guys that I look up to. And it's, I mean, it's unfortunate, is all we can say. But they were positive. People did show up. The family hopefully did well. So,
Yeah, there were definitely bright spots to the show. And, you know, as I said, like an outsider looking in, you would never guessed that so much work and stress went into putting together, you know, that kind of event. And like I said, the core roster of PWS, really, you know, they pulled it off, man. Every match was very solid. I really enjoyed having the chance to watch these guys work. Even DJ Mario getting in the mix, it's always fun seeing him out there too, getting squashed by Fala. I mean, like it was a fun show. I had a good time. It was for a great cause, and it's just disheartening to hear the shit that went through. I mean, unbelievable. But moving on, tomorrow night we have Andrew Anderson as our guest. He's a mainstay in ECPW. He had a cameo in The Wrestler. He was in a Skittles commercial. He's at every convention. He's all over the place. He's friends with Greg the Hammer Valentine, Brutus Beefcake. He's when you think of journeyman on the independent scene, like that's a dude he's just made a living forever on the independent scene. So I'm sure he has some interesting stories to tell.
And he's got a little documentary that he's a part of called Behind the Ropes, so we'll be talking to him about that.
Well, they're doing a Kickstarter for that, so hopefully that actually gets completed.
It's done, I think, isn't it?
I don't know. I thought I just saw a Kickstarter thing for it. You know what? We'll just ask them tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they're just like polishing up some things. They might be filming a couple more things. But if it's not completed, it's pretty damn close. So, yes, we will speak to him about that tomorrow. Thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you all learned something about the seedy underbelly of the wrestling business. And for Kevin and Eddie, this is Tony. And we will see you all again in about 22 hours.
Holy shit.